Welcome back, everybody, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. Today, the topic is going to be one of the most popular topics ever because it started out with children and a personality disorder a few months ago on my podcast, and without fail, Co-Parenting with a Narcissist hands down has most of the downloads. We have Bill Eddy here, who's going to help all of you immensely in dealing with co-parenting with a high conflict personality. Bill is the triple threat of being an attorney, a mediator, and a therapist. He has the High Conflict Institute in San Diego, California, where so much information will be given to you on how to manage a high conflict other parent when you're in that situation. Bill trains every human walking the face of the earth. Individuals, businesses, therapists, colleges, homeowners associations, all right, the breeding ground for arguments and craziness. He's also the author of 17 books. He travels internationally, he speaks everywhere, and we are absolutely fortunate to have you with us today, Bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. I'm glad to be on with you.
So let's lay the groundwork first. Co-parenting with a high conflict personality. What is a high conflict personality?
Well, what we found over the years is a high conflict personality has four key characteristics. They're preoccupied with blaming others, and since we're talking about co-parenting, that's often the other parent, but it could be anybody, and it could be more than one person. Secondly, is a lot of all-or-nothing thinking. Their solutions to problems are often extreme. It's all my way, your way doesn't count. I'm all smart, you're all stupid. Those types of thinking. Third is unmanaged emotions. And sometimes you can see that, you know, yelling, jumping up, running out of a room, throwing things, whatever. Sometimes you don't see it, but the person gets distracted by their emotions all the time. They kind of go down a different path. They were planning to do something, but somebody said something, and now they have to react to that. And so they're often running in an unhelpful direction for them as well as other people. And the fourth is extreme behavior. They tend to do things that 90% of people would never do. And they blame it on stress or they were tired. But if you just look at the behavior, you see, wait a minute, 90% of people wouldn't spread a rumor like that or wouldn't hide money or hide children like that. So we tend to see extremes of behavior, but there may not be all the time. And so it may just be an incredible blow up about, you know, 20 minutes of parenting time. I have to have that or I'll die kind of thing. And so you can see these are barriers to cooperation. So extreme behaviors. But this pattern's easy to see. Most people can say, yeah, high conflict personality, those four things. Yeah, I'm making lists already in my head.
You know? Yes.
But it's so important to tell people, don't tell the other person you think they have a high conflict personality. That just makes things much, much worse.
Thank you for that. Is there a personality type in the high conflict world that's the hardest to co-parent with?
Actually, I would say it isn't a type. It's a question of how severe. So there's five types of high conflict personalities that overlap with the traits of personality disorders. So of course there's narcissistic personalities, antisocial personalities, borderline personalities, paranoid personalities, histrionic, dramatic personalities. And I would say from my experience that probably the worst scenario is someone that has more than one of these. And I think of my worst case, I think I represented one party and the other party, I think, had four out of five of what I just described. So we had false allegations, we had arrogance, we had paranoia, we had mood swings. We just had all of that, and it kept the case going for about 10 years in court.
Oh my gosh.
So that's an extreme. But I wouldn't say any of these in particular is the worst. It's a matter of how severe it is. And so some people with one of these may be so severe that they're really dangerous, and they really need to be restrained. Maybe even, you know, they've engaged in criminal behavior and need to be locked up. So I wouldn't say any of these is the most. It's a question of how severe it is and whether they have more than one.
Okay, fair enough on that. So how can a high-conflict spouse, or a non-high-conflict spouse,
yeah, what I call
that,
a reasonable person.
Let's do that, yeah. How can the reasonable parent respond to some typical situations that I'm going to lay out for you that happen all the time in a co-parenting relationship with a high-conflict personality? First one. Changing the co-parenting schedule at the last minute to suit their schedule, whatever their schedule is. What do you do?
Yeah, well, it's in many ways, I suggest doing some steps. I'm going to call this the CARS method. We talk about that in some of our books. Connect with the person and say, you know, okay, I appreciate your concern. Something came up for you and you want to change the schedule right now. Okay, I can acknowledge that. I recognize that. Second is analyzing options. Let's look at the choices here. I can't do that switch for such and such reason. So you're going to need to look for some other solution. Or I can do that and let's trade Tuesday for Thursday. So connect with the person, analyze choices, respond to any misinformation. You know, actually, you do have more options than that. We're not stuck here. Anything that needs responding, just to clarify. And setting limits. You know, this has happened before. It's happening again. If this happens again in the future, I'm going to have to do such and such. You know, maybe this isn't a good parenting schedule. If there's a pattern that it keeps happening. So setting limits. So really connecting, analyzing, responding, and setting limits is one kind of way to structure your response.
And you know, you actually just said something interesting. Maybe the co-parenting schedule needs to change.
Yep.
Which is a very reasonable thing and a fluid thing anyway.
Yeah. And we see that sometimes people that are always needing to change the schedule because they don't plan their own life well and too many things pop up, or let's say having to work late. And so, you know, let's say dad's supposed to pick up the kids at 6 from daycare or something like that. And he always ends up having to work late and he calls mom, you know, can you please pick up the kids? I can't do it. If it's a pattern, that's when you say, look, maybe mom should have the kids at 6 o'clock and then decide if you're going to pick them up from mom or maybe not on those days. And so look at what are our choices here? What are our options? But the big picture sometimes, if it's a pattern of behavior,
see, that's key. You just mentioned something that's key. So instead of getting in the emotional fracas of it all,
yeah,
look for a pattern, and maybe that's your indication to change.
Yeah.
For everybody.
And a big thing you said right there is not getting into the emotional fracas about it.
Yes.
That's the key, is as much as possible staying calm and being focused on problem solving. Because the emotions tend to pull us into the past, which we can't change. And it's like, well, you always, you never. And once you blow that up, it becomes problematic. I should mention that I write a blog for Psychology Today. And one of my most recent ones was Keep the Conflict Small. And the idea is don't add in all this other stuff. Just stay focused on this little issue right here and now. Don't talk about the relationship. Don't talk about, you know, the history. Just focus on this now. But if things keep happening like that, then you may need to focus on a bigger change of the schedule.
I guess same thing. You're probably going to say the same thing in response to these other examples. I'm just going to say them because people get involved in them and it's nice for them to hear that there are workable solutions. And those are showing up late or to get the children or bringing the children home too early on, you know, to the other parent. You know, that means the other parent has to be there. What is that part? What are the choices and responses there?
Yeah. So you might say if you're home and the kids are supposed to come to you an hour from now and you're busy getting some other projects done or something like that, is, you know, look at, again, connect with the person, you know, well, you know, I see, you know, you're telling me you had to do this. I appreciate that something came up for you. Then look at the choices. I can handle this or I can't handle this because you're going to have to do something else with the kids for an hour because I'm not available. So talking about what the choices are, or yes, I am available. And then some other times say, look, this has happened, you know, 6 times in the last month. We need to change the schedule. So if it's small, keep it small. If it's a pattern, in the moment, keep it small, but separate from that, especially when the kids aren't around, say we need to talk about the big picture.
Making negative statements about the other parent when the high conflict personality is with the children.
When the parent's around, or they just get feedback from the kids?
Feedback,
you know?
Not around, but...
Yeah, that's one that most people should be able to point to their court orders and say, now remember, neither party shall make disparaging remarks about the other parent in the presence of the children, nor allow others to do so. It's so common that it's memorized.
You know, isn't that great? And I couldn't believe it when I got into this business that it's actually a law. You have to have it in your child custody sections in the settlement agreements.
But it's hard to enforce, and so this is one where you may just remind the other person, remember such and such. You know, the kids are telling me you're bad-mouthing me around them, and you need to stop doing that. Remember Section 17 in our marital settlement agreement. We're both trying to avoid doing that.
Do you think that would be an opportunity, maybe either for a mediation or a therapy session, where that could be worked out and maybe put at bay?
It could be, especially if it seems to be a pattern. And that's a lot of what we see with high conflict personalities, is they do have a pattern. And that's one they have a pattern about. They can't stop themselves. They badmouth everybody. They badmouth their boss to the kids, their neighbor to the kids, and now their former spouse to the kids.
I never thought about it that way, that that could be a pattern in their life beyond the family.
Yes, it's a personality pattern.
Ah.
And that's what we know about high conflict personalities, and their relationship to personality disorders is personality disorders are an enduring pattern of behavior that persists in multiple environments. And so most high conflict people have traits of personality disorders. And so that's why you see patterns, because personality disorders are stuck in narrow range patterns of behavior. So this may be something you're not really going to completely be able to change. And for some people, they go back to court and say, here's various, we need to change our plan, including he can't stop badmouthing me to the kids. So he's, you know, it's probably better if they're not exposed to him as much of the time, or her. And all this stuff is gender neutral.
Right,
of course.
Could
be either gender.
Absolutely.
We see a lot of each. But perhaps changing the time schedule, maybe that parent should have less time with the kids if they can't stop bad-mouthing the other parent. Because that's one of the biggest things. And a lot of states have the law saying that, you know, our preference is the parent that supports the other parent's relationship with the children. And so that's a preference in making parenting decisions.
That's good. Does that exist in our California court system?
Yeah.
Does it?
So there's a preference
quite that way
about the parent supporting the other parent. There's also health and safety factors in preferences, but it says there's a preference for the parent who supports the relationship of the children with the other parent.
Okay, so this is actually brilliant what you just said, because this is encouragement and incentive for the reasonable parent not to get in the mud, in the fracas, and really be the most respectful they can be, because ultimately it'll help the children via the court's orders for more time with the reasonable parent, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent.
So, and sometimes it's good to say, remember Family Code Section 3044 or something like that. But it says those types of words.
Right.
And that's a way to deal with the other parent in a matter-of-fact way, is please remember the such and such.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so this is perfect now to segue to the children.
Yeah.
So how does the reasonable parent explain the high conflict parent's behavior to the children and offer coping mechanisms?
And here's where it really comes to the book we have, Don't Alienate the Kids. And the idea is, teach your kids the four big skills for life. The four big skills for life being flexible thinking, managed emotions, moderate behavior, and checking yourself rather than blaming others. And teach these in a routine, matter-of-fact, everyday type of way. Oh, we're at the store and someone was yelling at somebody else in the aisles, or that person was, you know, nasty to the clerk. And so, do you think that person was using managed emotions, kids? No, they weren't using managed emotions. Did they get what they want? No, they didn't get what they want. So unmanaged emotions doesn't work like managed emotions does. Or you see a movie or something. You say, in the movie, and I remember the movie with Jackie Robinson, and when he's the first black baseball player.
I saw that film. I love that film.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was fascinating to me. He was a perfect example of a reasonable person. He's up at bat and someone's heckling him from the stands, I guess. They're saying, nah, 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 you know, you're no good. You're this, you're that. You don't know what you're doing.
And also the other team, too.
And I think sometimes the other team.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he just stayed focused and didn't take it. So you say, were those people managing their emotions? No. Was that extreme behavior? Yes. And so by telling kids to think about these four big skills for life, because this will help them in any relationship, at work, in their community, getting dates, you know.
Don't we all need help with that?
And so by teaching this, the kids are going to see the other parents not doing that. They go, oh, dad's not managing his emotions. Or mom's not using flexible thinking. She's got all or nothing solutions here. And so the kids, you're not bad-mouthing the other parent. You're giving them skills by which they can recognize these are problematic behaviors. And that's the way you can say, look, dad's doing something he shouldn't be doing. Don't say that. Say flexible thinking, managed emotion, moderate behavior, checking yourself, and your kids will think that.
Completely brilliant. And so, as you said, you're not bad-mouthing the other parent. You never want to be that example. And teaching children these skills, and as you said in your book, Don't Alienate the Children, you're showing them how to be leaders and better decision makers for the future.
Yeah.
And what you've just done by this is you've allowed the children to take a negative in their lives, divorce, and use it for a positive.
Yeah.
Or take difficult parents if they're still in the marriage and in the same home and use it for a positive. And isn't that how we have to use life?
Yeah. Yeah. It's ironic, but it's a real kind of learning context, because it's learning to deal with high conflict in the future, because they're going to have people. They say now in the workplace, 50% of the problems in the workplace are other people. and probably high conflict people.
Yes, and you mentioned in Don't Alienate the Kids about the family being a system. And even though you may have one person that is identifiably a higher conflict personality, everybody plays a role in the conflict.
Yeah, and this is what's hard for people to get if they're in the middle of it, because it's easy to see good guy, bad guy. You know, one person's doing everything wrong, the other person's doing everything right, and of course that must be me. I'm doing everything right and the other person's doing everything wrong. Well, the reality is, especially in, for example, alienation types of cases, there may be a person who's driving a lot of that because they're passing on their all or nothing thinking, their unmanaged emotions, extreme behavior, and extreme solutions. But the other person who may not be driving that may still reinforce it by getting angry about it, and the kids feel their anger. So, you know, your mother's bad-mouthing me, saying bad things about me. Why aren't you talking back to her, you know, son or daughter? You know, and so the child's feeling the other parent's anger, and now they got two angry people, they end up picking a side. And I tell people it's like North and South Korea. There's a demilitarized zone in the middle. There's this strip of land. Nobody lives there. You got to pick an army. If you're in the middle of a war zone, you got to pick an army. Which army are you going to go with? So if you're a reasonable parent, don't act like you're at war too. Tell your child, I know this is a hard situation for you. I know it's tough, you know, but let's look at how we can be reasonable, manage our emotions, use our flexible thinking so that they show empathy for the child.
And that's what I was just going to say. And the child can show empathy for the other parent, the high conflict parent, instead of demonizing and not wanting to be around them. Maybe they can help manage their parent. I mean, it's a horrible thing to have to say, but you got to do it in life.
Hey, teenagers do it all the time.
Don't they manage us? Yes, they certainly do.
Yeah, but it really is giving them tools without emotionally reacting. Because what we find is there's a couple concepts so important about family dynamics. And one is that emotions are contagious. And so people absorb each other's emotions. And so if one person gets angry, it's you feel pulled to become angry also, either with them or against them. And so we have to manage our emotions better so that kids don't pick that up, that they are supposed to feel what we're feeling. The other thing is emotional repetition in isolation is the core of alienation, in that a child is hearing a message repeated over and over and over again, your dad's no good or your mom's an idiot or whatever, and they hear this over and over, but it's emotional words. Emotional words get into your brain differently and you're more defensive and it makes you anxious. And so these emotional words getting repeated in isolation. So when you have a child, let's say it's the only child, and they're living part of the time with mom, part of the time with dad, and one of these two parents, could be mom, could be dad, is constantly bad-mouthing the other parent, the child's absorbing that because of the emotional repetition. Like the divorce was all your mother's fault. And so next thing you know, the child's saying, I don't want to see mom because the divorce was all her fault. And you're like, where did that come from? Well, dad said that like 100 times in the last 2 years. That's where it came from. Because we absorb even without thinking. That's how advertising works. And frankly, that's how prejudice works too, is people hear it. But a lot of it's the emotions. Parents aren't even aware that they're passing their emotions to the child.
They really aren't. They live in their own head of pain, and they're trying to get out of their pain.
Right.
And they spew it on anybody around them, i.e. the children.
And that's so important point to make about high conflict personalities is they are in pain and they don't see it. And so to relieve the pain, they attack the people around them. And it doesn't work. So they're missing They're missing the boat on what to do. If they would change their own behavior a little bit, they'd be so much happier. People with high conflict personalities tend to not have friends, tend to be always reacting to things. Things don't work and they're trying to fix them. So the drives underneath are really the same as everybody else has. They want friends, they want love, they want respect, but the way they're going about it pushes people away and they don't even see it. And that's how the kids get caught up in this. It's really about the personalities and how contagious personalities can be.
And we know they can be because we experience this every day in our jobs. We may not want to be sucked into somebody else, a coworker's drama. Somehow we are.
Yeah.
So I want to move this now into the court system, the place everybody fears, but sometimes you have to go there. You can't avoid it. Mediation doesn't work. The lawyers can't negotiate a settlement. So we all know that it is an uncertain journey when you get inside the court system. It could be the worst thing you've ever done with the guardian ad litems and all the vocational people and the psychologists. And then we have these poor children, but you have developed something new to address this, and I'd like you to share this, please.
Yeah. So building on the theme of these four big skills, we looked at what happens in court and how can we help high conflict people stay out of court, because often that's where they end up and they're reasonable partners as well. So we developed a method we called New Ways for Families. And the idea with New Ways for Families is to teach these same four big skills, but to have, ideally, a judge orders both parents to either go to counseling that uses this method. And we developed a workbook with six sessions. So each parent, when it works ideally, judge orders both parents to go to New Ways for Families. They pick a counselor who's been trained in the method. We do a two-day training for therapists and lawyers, mediators, and judges if they'll come. And we've had some judges.
I know there are judges that really want to move forward in a new way.
Yes, yes. And so interest in this is really growing now. We've had developed this method for many years, but now it's really getting interest because these families are so stuck. And so it teaches them these skills, teaches them how to write BIF emails as a way of managing their behavior. It teaches them how to calm themselves with encouraging statements, how to make proposals, ask questions about proposals, basically how to communicate. So they have six individual sessions each, and then three parent-child sessions where they teach the kids these skills. Both parents, it's always both parents ordered into this. And the results, where we've done some small-scale studies on this, like 100 families, almost 80% of them, 79% with one group, were able to stay out of court and settle their case out of court reasonably. Now, one thing I want to say to reasonable parents is, you often think the other person needs counseling. How can I get them into counseling? And this is one way you could do it. You just have to agree to do it yourself as well.
Mm.
It's six sessions structured. You each will have the same workbook. We'll learn the same skills. And there's no decision that you're the bad guy, you're the good guy. It's just both parents will benefit from this and the kids will really benefit by both parents. So I want to say we've developed that. We've trained people in, I think, 26 cities. Only five or six has it been routine part of the court. And we also have an online program now. And so we have one court system in California has ordered probably 1,000 parents to take the online program, teaching these four skills, of course. And now we train coaches, so therapists, lawyers, mediators, parent educators, to coach with the online program. So typically they'll meet with their client three times, maybe in person, maybe over the phone, maybe by Zoom, and practice the skills. like the BIF response emails.
Can you say what that is? And anybody listening to this, please look at the podcast we posted last week. Bill goes into large measure what BIF is, but just take a minute and say it.
Real briefly, it's a response to hostility or misinformation that's brief, informative, friendly, and firm. And we actually have a little book on this called BIF, Quick Responses to High Conflict People, Their Personal Attacks, Hostile Emails, and Social Media Meltdowns.
And because anybody dealing with not only a high conflict person, but just a plain old angry person.
Yes.
You know, I really recommend you buy this book off of Bill's website, BIF, because it helped me measurably when I have been and still deal with high conflict personalities in my own mediations.
Yeah. Yeah. And people
or my own clients, for heaven's sakes, that maybe pop up as being high conflict and I didn't even realize it initially.
Yeah. Well, one thing is we can teach it to our clients, high conflict clients and reasonable clients, but we can also use it ourselves in our work lives, because occasionally you get a nasty email from someone out there and you need to respond reasonably so you don't escalate the situation, but calm it down. And that's what BIF responses do. They calm. I think of it as pouring water on the flames.
Yes.
Is you can respectfully respond, get the information across that needs to come,
yes,
without reacting or overreacting.
Excellent. So on your website, do you give a list of cities or counties, states that use your
method? We do.
Yes.
Yes. So we've had a separate website, newwaysforfamilies.com, and on there it lists professionals that maintain their listing with us. There's some people don't renew with us each year, so we've trained more people than are on there, but people who are actively doing it in these cities, and I'm pretty sure it's 26 cities all around.
That's considerable.
And some cities, the lawyer maybe in a case may tell the judge, please order New Ways for Families. And so judges are ordering it that we don't even know about individually.
So this could be a way that the reasonable parent guides their attorney to a better resolution with the high conflict parent.
Yeah. So this will get the high conflict parent some skills and tends to calm them down rather than escalate them. That doesn't change their personality in 6 weeks, but it may change some of their behavior. And especially both parents teaching the kids the same skills, the outcome we've seen in the small 100 family research was that half the kids felt less stress, fewer headaches, slept better. It really, because they absorb so much stress in high conflict cases.
So, Bill, when you were mediating co-parenting plans,
yeah,
did you ever bring the children in?
I personally didn't. And I feel that it's important to make the parents make these hard decisions and as much as possible exhaust that before involving the children. So personally, I didn't bring the children in. I've had cases where, for example, we were involved with the court, family court services would interview a child. And then they would write a recommendation and the parents would come back to mediation and we'd mediate a final agreement. So I'm not opposed to it in absolute terms, but what I found is I could, in private mediation where I can meet as many times with people as necessary, I could sometimes 5, 6, 7 sessions get a full agreement by the parents. So they were being the responsible people rather than having to bring in the child. But let me suggest, when we do New Ways for Families, the counseling model, the 6 individual sessions, then the 3 parent-child sessions, what we really want is the parents to hear it from their kids, what the kids are worried about. And we don't go deep. We're not looking at the past. We're not looking at, you know, why this and that didn't happen. We're just saying, hear what the kids' concerns are right now. They're worried about, you know, where their athletic gear is going to stay, you know, which house. What about, you know, your new girlfriend or your new boyfriend? Like, I don't know if she likes me. Those kinds of things. So that's, to us, ideally, we want kids and parents hearing from each other.
And what this could do, and I'm sure it does, is address one thing that I've heard every single child say that I've talked to about divorce.
Yeah.
And that I've seen on a number of wonderful videos on YouTube and Google about children of divorce. They say they're worried about everything you just mentioned,
yeah.
But their bottom line is that none of that matters. All of that is solvable as long as their parents get along.
Yes, yes. And that's the key. And all the research on parenting plans is the best parenting plans are what both parents support. It could be weird, but both parents support it. The kids go along with it, and it works. I've had people come in who are already practicing on their own some pretty strange parenting plans. And yet, I say, how's it going? I said, well, you know, at first the kids were confused or something, but now they're used to it. All right, let's not mess with what works or change things in a small way. So that's one of the dilemmas parents have is there's no perfect parenting plan. It's got to be how you two fit with the kids and what the kids' needs are.
Yes, and when people come into my office to arrange the co-parenting schedules, they start off with, well, we looked at 2-3-2, and then we looked at I have weekdays, he or she has weekends. And I say, well, that's great. Yeah. Wonderful that you've already started exploring. But my method, and you can tell me if it's right or wrong, I say, can we lay out what the children's schedule is first? When do they get up? When do they eat? When do they have to go to school? When do the activities take place, weekdays and weekends? It doesn't matter. Now, let's look at the parents' schedules. How do we make this work? What do you think?
I think that's great.
Yeah?
I think that's great. Because what you're doing is turning into problems to solve. And using the rational part of the brain, the logical part that looks at numbers and schedules and can see, oh, there's a space there. Or I can never do Thursday nights because I have this special meeting or something. So you can have Thursday nights. So I think anything that makes it into a problem to solve rather than a conflict to be defensive about.
Yes.
And with high conflict personalities, that's the big issue, is getting them into their problem-solving brain. Once we can do that, they can often be quite productive. And high conflict people can be I've had, you know, because I worked in hospitals as a social worker, when I became a family lawyer, I got a lot of doctors and doctor spouses as clients. In court cases as well as mediation, because doctors really don't like court that much.
for obvious reasons.
But they can be really good at problem solving when they're not reactive, when they're not defensive. And so some of my high conflict cases are people with a lot of professional experience, but when it's personal, they become like three-year-olds. In fact, I had one case with a doctor and his wife, and they said at the end of, I don't know, 6 or 8 divorce mediation sessions, thank you for stopping us when we were acting like three-year-olds. And it was just so perfect.
That is great. The level of self-awareness for that, too.
Yes.
And everything that you've just said gives us hope.
Yes.
And I think that's what parents in this situation need. There is hope. This can change, right?
Absolutely. I think the key is, with the time you have, is teach your kids the 4 big skills for life. And in dealing with the other parent, you know, calm them to the extent you can. Be brief, informative, friendly, and firm. And if you have to go to court, present what the patterns of difficulty are and keep a record of those. If you're dealing with a high conflict parent, you often need to keep a record of problems and and also what you're doing that's responsible. Because when something blows up, if it does, you need to have some good notes so it's not just he said, she said.
Right. And those four skills, though, in conclusion, are that you refer to teaching the children?
The four big skills: flexible thinking, managed emotions, moderate behavior, and checking yourself to do all of these rather than blaming others.
Thank you so much. I really appreciated this because I know how valuable everything you said is for every listener and every parent. So, Bill, how do people get more information from you?
They can come to our website, highconflictinstitute.com, and we've got books, videos, articles, consultation. Groups can invite us to speak for a fee. And there's just, we just keep trying to create more things. We have workbooks, we've got methods, but we have a lot of support for people, a lot of empathy, and I think people pick that up.
Yes.
From all of our materials. And we have the New Ways for Families website, newwaysforfamilies.com, which has information about the cities that we've trained people in, and also information about the online program, which is called Parenting Without Conflict, and it's available anywhere in the world.
This is great. Bill, thank you again so, so, so much. I have appreciated the time you've given us. I know you've helped countless people what you do.
Thank you for this opportunity.
And thank you all for listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host, and if you wanted to get in touch with me, you can at my email address, Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com. Judy at constructiveuncoupling.com. I always welcome your comments and concerns for the future. Thank you so much, and we'll speak to you next week.